I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. This week, one of our regulars, it is John Oran of the Sports Business Daily and Sports Business Journal. They're a longtime media reporter. Check out John's excellent newsletter if you are a subscriber to the Sports Business Daily, Sports Business Journal. That's something he's been doing for the last couple months. It's some great stuff in there. Some great analysis, breaking reporting. And after that really incredibly nice intro, John Orand joins us on the Sports Media Podcast. John, welcome back.
I wasn't expecting an intro that nice, Richard.
John, do you want me to start with the disloyalty that you have shown by going on Jimmy Trina's Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, or should we save that for the end?
Let's save that for the end.
Okay, I'm with you on that. All right. So let us start, John, with... You like that? There you go. It'll give everybody in the 860 area code a reason to stick around. Let's start with potential Super Bowl matchups and the conference championships that are coming up. We're taping this on the Monday after the divisional playoff round, and so we have the San Francisco 49ers against the Green Bay Packers, which should be a really nice viewership play. And then we have the Chiefs and the Titans, which is probably, which probably provides a little more guesswork into how that plays out, given that the Titans in national windows viewership has not been great, but the Chiefs are usually over-index their place when it comes to their media market size. So let's just start here, John. Sort of an overview of the final four teams that are left in the NFL. It's been a great season for them in terms of viewership. But how do you see the remaining teams that are left in terms of the last couple games here, viewership wise?
You know, if you talk to TV executives about the NFL and NFL ratings and why they're up, they always fall back to storylines. And I think if you take a look at the storylines of the teams that are left, only Lamar Jackson is not there. That's sort of like a season-long storyline that people were taking a look at. And perhaps Derrick Henry and what he's been doing over the past couple of games will fit in. But I think on the NFC side, you have big brands with national followings and a lot of history. And so I think in the NFC, you're fine with the Packers and the 49ers. I think Mahomes is somebody who, not just Mahomes, but I think the Chiefs, you know, they've been good for several years. I think that people are following that storyline as well. And I think that, I think once you get to the Final Four in the NFL, I think that you're going to be fine no matter what. I don't think the NFL is as market-dependent or as team-dependent as really any other league. And so I think the numbers that we see are going to be the biggest numbers on TV since the Super Bowl. I mean, that's a pretty safe prediction, and it's a safe prediction that's come true for the past several years, and it's going to hold on into the Super Bowl. But if three of the four are pretty standard teams, I got to think that the TV network executives are pretty happy about this.
So let me just push back a little bit, John, on one thing. Is the Super Bowl market dependent? Probably not. I think that's sort of a fair take. I do think the conference championships, though, are a little bit and certainly matchup dependent. My pushback on you would be, if the Titans make the Super Bowl, do you see that as an interesting test in that we'd be talking about a team making the Super Bowl with, again, one of the lowest viewership numbers in terms of when they've played in national windows in some time. And it's not a, and this is no disrespect to the Titans themselves, obviously they're an incredible story, but it's not a, it's not any kind of historic or landmark team the way the Packers are, the way the Chiefs are, even the way the Niners are. So I, to me, that would be if the Titans beat the Chiefs, that Super Bowl viewership number is going to be really, really interesting to me, because they're kind of a unique, they'd be, a, in my opinion, a pretty unique team in the Super Bowl.
I'd have to agree, I would have to agree with you. The Super Bowl is still going to see over 105 million viewers, which nothing on TV is going to get close to that. Regardless.
Although not last year, my friend. 98.5, right? Low last year.
I've upgraded that prediction then. But still, discernibly more than anybody else. You have the stats in front of you, Artie. That's not fair.
I do. Here we go. 90. I love just so I'm not just so you're on ball here, John. Patriots Rams, 98.2 million viewers, TV only. When digital and streaming were included, 100.7 million viewers. That, by the way, lowest average viewership number since 2009. So last year was a little bit of a down fluke, but you know it was down pretty significantly from other years.
Look, if it was going to be Tennessee versus say Seattle, I think that might raise an eyebrow or two. But if you're going to have, you know, the historic Green Bay Packers with Aaron Rodgers in there toward the end of his career, I think that's a great storyline that's going to pull people in. If you're going to get, you know, think Joe Montana and Steve Young and Jerry Rice, you know, if you're going to get like that brand of the 49ers in there again to do that, I think that, you know, that's they're going to pull a pretty big number. So I don't think having the Tennessee Titans in there is something that's going to it's going to have an effect, of course, but I don't think it's going to have that great of an effect on Super Bowl viewership. Hang on, that was my opinion. Your opinion, Richard, is that it will have a great effect, though, right?
It will. Yes, I do. I think the Titans in the Super Bowl will have an impact on that final viewership number. That is not to say, again, because there are so many multiple factors that it couldn't be a monster viewership number far over last year's. If the game is close, if it's, you know, if it's 21-21 with 2 minutes left, you get, as John, you and I have both studied and written about ratings now for multiple decades, you know, you get word of mouth viewership. You get tune in late. There's a reason why games peak at certain times. And oftentimes it is the last quarter or the last couple minutes. So I think the game itself can sort of can dictate some of the viewership numbers, but I do think, at least heading in, I do think the Titans are a challenge for the NFL. And again, I say all that under the larger caveat of they're guaranteed close to 100 million viewers regardless. But I do think there's a big, in my opinion, there's a significant difference between the Titans and the Chiefs.
Yeah, that's my favorite line.
Pat Mahomes versus Ryan Tannehill, marketing-wise, it's not even close. And then the just Chiefs haven't been in the Super Bowl for a long time. They're a historic franchise. They have an incredibly rabid fan base. I think if you're the NFL, secretly, if you gave them truth serum, they're rooting for the Chiefs. There's no question. In my opinion, there's no question about that.
You'd rather have the Chiefs, but I'll tell you what, that Derrick Henry storyline, I mean, he's setting records right now. I mean, he's like a robot. He's like Earl Campbell almost running there. I think that's something that people will want to tune into and watch.
You think a star running back is more marketable than a star quarterback in the NFL? Come on now.
Not more marketable, but I think this run that Derrick Henry is on, no pun intended, is historic, and I think the casual fans will, you know, will. I mean, he gets the ball and he's 8 yards past the line of scrimmage. It's you know, you haven't seen stuff like this in a long time.
No, why do you hate Kansas City, John? Or in anyway, all right, the fair points, but by all the I saw a note by your own Austin Carp here. Sports accounted for 92 of the 100 most viewed telecasts in 2019, the highest number of sports telecasts ever to be included in the yearly list of television's top 100 shows. John, that's incredible to me. It's basically like conventional television is essentially sports and like reality-based dramas and some news, and that's it. It blows me away seeing those numbers. Doesn't surprise me, just blows me away. And then on top of that, John, the NFL accounts for 78 of the top 100 telecasts. I think both me and you have had great chuckles over the years for people who claim that the NFL media rights number is going to go down, for people who claim the NFL's in trouble. I mean, it's just, it's such a silly thing. And you see some of these stats, and it's just a reminder that even in an age of cord cutting, just how powerful this property is.
Yeah, you know, I started covering this hard about 13, 14 years ago, everybody's been telling me to write the story about the media rights bubble and how they can't continue to go up. Well, this is proof positive that not only are they going to go up, they're going to go up for the NFL, they're going up for the SEC, they went up for the PGA Tour. I mean, think about your own life. Like you know, with my kids, you know, they wouldn't be caught dead tuning in at a certain time to a network a television show. You know, they will watch it via Netflix or Hulu or, you know, any one of a number of streaming services, and they'll binge watch it, and they'll watch it on their own time. Fox made a decision that it was going to just have live programming or live-ish type programming most primetime nights. I mean, so that's the whole point of them going out and getting the WWE on Friday nights and Thursday night football. And, you know, I'm sure you're going to see baseball get on one of their primetime shows. It's in the television right now, and the broadcast networks place an incredible value on being able to live sports and, you know, live, you know, like the Academy Awards or Golden Globes or like live award shows or sort of live reality type programming. And outside of that, like, you know, everybody is streaming that. And that's the way TV is going. And the sports leagues are, you know, they're licking their lips. I mean, they're if you're a mid-tier or a top-tier sports league, you're going to see a massive growth in rights fees. It's just that's the way of the world right now.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
John, I want to, since you brought this up, we'll do this real quick. You were all over the story of ESPN landing the top tier SEC football rights from CBS when that contract expires, I think after the 2023 season. There's been some talk. I got to stop saying like there's been some talk. Let's be more specific. There's a sort of a roadmap here where you would think that ESPN would love to get that package a couple years in advance, given that CBS is a lame duck year, ESPN is ultimately going to get it. But if you're CBS, you have an incredible property that draws about 8 million people each week, and you have one of the great deals in sports rights when you're paying only $55 million. In your opinion, given that you've been at the forefront of this reporting, what percentage do you give ESPN figuring out a way to buy out CBS for the remaining years of that package?
I would put it at 95% that ESPN figures out how to buy CBS out. I'm not sure exactly when that would happen. I would expect CBS will have it at least one more year. But beyond that, you know, ESPN is coming to this negotiation. It's more than just dollars and cents, too. I mean, suppose ESPN says, oh, we have, you know, the American Athletic Conference, and we'll give you, you know, 10 years where you can have, you know, some of those rights, or the Big 12 or the Pac-12. I mean, they have rights everywhere that they could mix and match. And if you're CBS, it's like, well, I have, you know, 3 more years of the SEC, or I could do like 1 more year of the SEC and then like 10 more years of, you know, good programming that we could put into that time slot for essentially the same price. So it's those negotiations and those talks have not happened yet, But I would expect it to be a lot more of a barter deal than a straight, like, hey, here's some money and let us have it early.
John, do you think that's just my own curiosity? Do you think it's better to have a lower tier conference for like 10 years than 3 more years of maybe the most, not maybe important is not the right word, but the college rights package, at least regular season wise, that's of more interest than any other college rights package that's out there?
You know, I brought up the American, but you know, suppose ESPN dangles like you have a Big Ten game, so you can put an Ohio State game in there, or a Michigan game in there, or so they have a relationship with the ACC. Suppose they could get Clemson in there, or actually, does another ACC school play football? I'm not sure, but I think that there are some big brands and some major colleges that could work on a broadcast basis, and that ESPN would be willing to cede to CBS just to keep it off like ESPN2 or U or Plus.
That's interesting. I don't know what's going to happen, and your reporting is far closer to this than anything I've done, but I'll be curious. That's a curious one for me because if you're CBS and you're making that calculation, you do have a couple of years left of massive ratings, which you can make a lot of money on, regarding advertising, especially given what you're paying for it. So that'll be an interesting calculation for them as to how they do it.
Yeah, but it's still a 3:30 broadcast window, and that CBS has. I mean, and who else? Who knows what else could come into play there? I'm just talking about college football. They could do college basketball. They could do like a myriad of other rights.
The one thing I do agree with you on for sure is ESPN absolutely wants it. I mean, you if you're ESPN, you got to try to get that as fast as you can. You've invested a ridiculous amount of money for this thing, and you want to start the promotion of that. You want to start viewers associating you with the Alabama versus Auburn and LSU versus Alabama, et cetera. So I understand,
But, Richard, as you said, it's going to cost a pretty penny. The $55 million a year for that package is such a sweetheart deal, especially now that – ESPN is talking about paying, in the low 300s, close to 6x, what they were getting. It's it's an incredible sweetheart deal, and it would cost a lot to get ESPN to get it early. But I would suspect that they're going to get it early.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's do one thing quick on Monday Night Football, John. First, let me caution everyone who's reading stuff about Tony Romo and salaries out there and Network X trying to get him. I would just say caution, maybe skeptical is not the right word, but when you're reading this stuff, see who's putting actual name to paper as opposed to speculation. I'll sort of just leave it at that. One thing that was reported, including names, was Andrew Marchand, the New York Post, reported that Jay Rothman is no longer going to be the executive producer of Monday Night Football. ESPN has not countered that. So, it's sort of, I think, very clearly that's accurate. And so we head to next year, John, when the ESPN's most important property, which is Monday Night Football, does not have its longtime leading producer on it. And there's a lot of discussion as to will Joe Tessitore and Booger McFarland return. Just from your little 10,000-foot viewpoint, John, what's going on with Monday Night Football? What do you think is sort of the next iteration there?
Well, so the Jay Rothman news follows, a year ago, Chip Dean, who'd had been with them forever, retired as producer. Jay Rothman, Marchand was first one with that, and I mean, as my sources have confirmed that as well. So not that Marchand needs my sources to confirm his reporting. But right now, where all of the networks, this is the year that the networks are going to be negotiating for their NFL rights. And, you know, from our earlier conversation, the NFL is going to make a mint out of these guys. And ABC, ESPN desperately wants to get better games. They want to be part of the Super Bowl rotation, and they want to be a bigger sort of better partner with the NFL. And one way to do that is to increase the production quality of Monday Night Football. And I think that if you're watching Monday Night Football and you're comparing it to Sunday Night Football, you're comparing it to the top broadcasts on Fox and on CBS, I don't know anybody that would put it in that sort of rarefied air there. And I think that ESPN right now wants to do what it can to try to just increase the production quality and the production level of Monday Night Football. I mean, if you take a look at ESPN's college football telecast, I think they're the best on TV. I think they're much better than ESPN's Monday Night Football telecast. And I think that, like, you know, they've proven that they can put out a good football production. The question is whether they can bring it onto the NFL or not.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you may get an email from Bill Hoffheimer, John, about this at ESPN PR. But the reality is, like, it's not close. Like, the CBS is a production, Fox is a production, NBC's a production, are just better productions than ESPN's Monday Night Football and have been for some time. There's always subjectivity when it comes to this stuff, John, and certainly subjectivity with the broadcasters. But I think if you just ask viewers, I mean, if you're ESPN and you're just honest with yourself, you're number four on this stuff, and maybe number five, actually, if I include Thursday Night Football. And so the question will be, how do you know, Monday Night Football is never going to feel like Monday Night Football during the days when they had Cosell and Meredith and Gifford and it was the only game in town. But it does lack something, you know, it does, like, it lacks that it factor. And I think part of that, and the biggest part of that, is the games themselves. You know, when Monday Night Football had the Chiefs Rams, you know, that incredible game, you know, that felt like the biggest game of the week. But NBC always feels like the biggest game of the week because of matchups. So, you know, it starts with matchups, but they need to up their production. You know, the McFarland thing on a crane, they've made some mistakes, and they've changed their broadcasters up multiple times. So it'll be interesting to see as they head forward what they do with that production. And very clearly, they want ABC to get into the Super Bowl rotation. And so that's going to be one of the big stories to follow, for sure, in 2020 and 2021.
And they can do it. I think when they had Tirico and Gruden, for ESPN, I think it's less about fans liking it than having the league sort of buy into it. The league loved that telecast. They thought it was a fine telecast. But Tirico leaving, Gruden leaving, seeing the sort of upturn in the announcing booth. You know, it's something that, you know, the NFL executives are keeping an eye on, and it's something that they want to show the NFL. I think you saw CBS doing this with the PGA and their golf telecast. They want to show the NFL, like, listen, we want the best packages and the best games moving forward, and we're going to do whatever we can to see it happen.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
John, we'll do just a couple quick minutes on Tony Romo. I think me and you are in agreement on this. We both have said for a long time we believe CBS will retain Tony Romo. You know, obviously I did a big embed with that group, the Wolfson, Nance, Romo, Jim Rickoff group. You know, I feel like I know them pretty well, but at the end of the day, people keep this stuff mostly to themselves. But I think when it comes to comfort level with a producer and an on-air person, I think when it comes to comfort level with the production team, I think when it comes to loyalty, and I think at the end of the day, CBS sort of knows what they have. I think they're going to end up retaining Romo. I think they're going to find whatever the number, dollar figure works to retain him. And obviously, I'm on the record saying he's the best, certainly the best game analyst working to the NFL. I think he's personally the best game analyst in the history of the medium. So I think when you have that kind of talent, that kind of transcendent talent, you do whatever you can to keep him. How do you think, at least at this point, John, as we're talking today, January 13th, 2020, how do you think this shakes out?
What's a couple million between friends, right? I think that CBS is going to offer something that's at least close enough to, really, ESPN's the only other one that I'm hearing that's out there. I can't imagine that NBC wants to replace Chris Collinsworth, who I think is fantastic, and I don't get the sense that Fox is eager to put Troy Aikman out to pasture. So it's really only ESPN that we're talking about here. And like, I don't think you can dismiss the comfort level that he has with Jim Nance and Tracy Wolfson. In fact, you know, I credit Nance very much with Tony Romo's rise. I think it's rare to find a play-by-play person that will allow his analysts to talk over him. And Nance did it with aplomb, and he's been doing it, and he draws Tony out. I think that Nance is an excellent partner for him. I think that Rickoff in the truck is somebody who, you know, there's a great comfort level with him there. I think that CBS's golf relationship is something that also will come into play here. You know, for Romo, like if he wants to call golf in the off season. I don't. The only scenario that I see where ESPN is able to poach Romo any other network is able to poach Romo from CBS is if they give him a number that is so far out of whack that it just doesn't make sense. I've been predicting for a long time, and my best sources also suggest like he's going to stick with CBS.
Yeah, I mean, everything you said is to me is dead on. My sources say the same thing. I will say this, sort of just two things to add. One, you can't understate the relationship that Romo has with Nance. It's not just two colleagues. They are friends, very close friends. Their families stay at each other's home. They have, they talk all the time and text all the time. It's a real relationship. They're friends, and they were friends before they broadcast. So this is not just a sort of an arranged marriage. These are two people who are consider themselves close friends. And just anytime you talk to Nance or Romo, they're not faking it. You can sort of see the genuine, you know, appreciation and love they have for each other. And then secondly, as you mentioned, Tony Romo has an incredibly close relationship with his producer, Jim Rickoff. That's his only producer he's ever known in television. Mike Arnold is the only director he's ever known. And so I think if you're Romo, to make that leap to a company that you've never worked for, to work with producers and directors you've never worked for, I mean, certainly it's been done before, but that's a big leap. I mean, even if you think about Madden leapt, when Madden made that leap, John, if, you know, younger people won't remember this, but older people will, like he left with a lot of his team. You know, he didn't just go solo. And so that's one of the reasons I would really be stunned if it happened. Now, I mean, does everybody have a number, John? I guess they do, but we're also talking about a guy who made like $100 million as a player. So while everybody loves money and it's all about money, you know, you do wonder if that sort of factors in. And then lastly, and I will say this, and this is just always interesting to me, And this just gets to corporations, John. Me and you may see this differently, but I do want to get your sort of opinion on this. When networks want to have money for something, there's always money. If ESPN wants to pay Stephen A. Smith $10 million, they find $10 million even if 2 years earlier they laid off 60 journalists. If CBS wants to find money for the Mountain West, you know, they got a couple hundred million dollars around. So it's always interesting to me that, like, sometimes there's haggling when it comes to, like, talent salary. But it's kind of silly because at the end of the day, if it's all Viacom's money, and and Tony Romo is on your most important television property, so why not look at him as the same asset you would as a sports right? So to me, if you actually let money be the determining factor on this, I just think that's bad business.
Unless you don't want to get your salaries out of whack, and if you're a CBS and you feel like with Jim Nantz and with Rick Off and Tracy Wolfen, and not to mention, like, you know, Burson and McManus as well, like, we have a pretty good crew here that we could fill in. Suppose Drew Brees comes out, you know, which you know, was reported over the weekend that some people have reached out to him. You know, I would think that if I were running CBS and the price for Romo gets absurdly high, I would think that I could bring somebody in who could do a credible job. And I think Tony Romo's good. I'm not with you where he's the best ever, and I'm not even sure I'm with you where I think he's the best on TV today. But I think he's pretty good. But I think he's also somebody who's easily replaceable. And if you're CBS, I mean, we talk about this all the time, Richard. How many people sit down and turn the TV on or off because of an announcer? And Romo might be good. He might be fun to listen to. But I'm watching that game, regardless of whether he's calling it or not, right? So at some point I do think money comes into play.
Well, John, once again, you are absolutely incorrect in your assessment about Tony Romo. That's one, but you know, that's not surprising. Two, yes, broadcasters do not change the viewership of any game at all, in my opinion. Both are opinions. But, and this is an important one, they have a massive impact, perhaps the biggest impact, on how you process the game, how much you enjoy the game, and what you come away with a larger feeling about that network. So in that sense, I think there is majorly important value when it comes to certain game-changing broadcasters. But yes, would the same amount of people watch Dallas Green Bay on CBS if it was Drew Brees versus Tony Romo? Yeah, I don't think Tony Romo would change the viewership number.
Right, and we agree. I think we just disagree in terms of how much that value is. I would be more willing to walk and hold a line to keep all my other analysts' salaries at bay.
Naturally, you're a typical management person. You'd pay the management people, while I want to pay the talent. Yeah, this is why the Norby Williamsons of the world call you, and they don't call me. That's really what it comes down to.
Hey, speaking of which, an aside to Norby, you haven't called me in a while, and I need some stories. Come on.
Norby and Josh are probably calling some other people, if you know what I'm saying. All right. You had the scoop of Scott Van Pelt moving back to Maryland moving to the D.C. area to do his sports center.
The DMV, we call it.
Yeah, out of the Eric Rideholm Dynastic Studios down there, which does Pardon the Interruption and some other things. I know you're very tight with Van Pelt. You both are Maryland dudes, University of Maryland dudes. What do you make of this, John? I mean, one, obviously it says that ESPN has great respect for Van Pelt, and two, wants to keep its talent happy. But that was pretty interesting to me to have a sports center now out of Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I think that more than anything, I mean, let's go through this process here. What other ESPN talent can go to ESPN management and say, you know what, I kind of want to go home. Is this okay? And it's a very short list of people that would be able to do that. SVP and I went to Maryland together back in the late 80s, and just the idea of I broke that story on Friday, and my Twitter mentions for the rest of the day and through the weekend were like I could barely get through them. And just thinking of, like, you know, the guy, he was a radio, television, and film major with me, RTVF, we called it, and just to see his popularity in this area and see sort of what it meant to the D.C. area is really cool. I mean, I was out at the Terp game on Tuesday when Maryland beat Ohio State, and Van Pelt was there. And on the video above the court, you know, they showed Torrey Smith, another Terp, you know, two-time Super Bowl champion. He got a nice ovation. And then they went from Torrey Smith to Van Pelt, and the place just erupted. Like, he has a popularity in the D.C. area that always astounds me, and it just makes me smile. It's pretty cool to see. And I just think, like, you know, he's somebody who has a, you know, ESPN wants to keep him happy. He's done well at Midnight. He's coming to a place where they, you know, like you said, Reinholm and PTI is, and it's you know, it seems to make sense. It's I'm curious to see how the show changes.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's a group of core talent that is sort of ESPN's, you know, Mount Rushmore guys at the moment, and Van Pelt obviously is on that list, and Stephen A. Smith is on that list, and then it gets, you know, then you could sort of determine, you know, is Schefter there? I mean, it seems like Mina Kimes is moving up there. There's always Rachel Nichols. There's always a group of people who management really, really sort of has separated both financially, psychically, everything else in terms of the management views their importance to the network. And, you know, if you're in that position, you should ask for this kind of stuff. And if you, you know, at the end of the day, Disney's got a ton of money and they can make studios work. They built, you know, that New York studio essentially for Mike Greenberg, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. So there's one thing about Disney and your buddy Jimmy Pitaro, there's always money when they need money.
Let's say Stephen A. Smith wants to go and do it from Philly. Like, I can't see ESPN saying yes to that, because
I can. Oh, I definitely, I totally disagree with you. If
really,
prior to signing his contract, if he said, I want to move First Take to Philadelphia, you don't think they would move First Take to Philadelphia? Come on, man.
Maybe the whole show. Maybe so. But his whole shtick is that he has to be in studio with the other person. Was my main point on that. And so I guess
No, I know, but I'm saying there are certain people at ESPN who I think have Jordan rules, and Stephen A. is one of them. And Scott Van Pelt. Stephen A. threatened Kevin Durant on the air, and they didn't blink. And then, you know, whatever.
Durant
a guy like David
Lloyd.
If a guy like David Lloyd parks in the wrong parking space, he probably gets suspended for 3 weeks. So, you know, I mean, there are different.
Especially if it's
John.
Space.
I know. Johnny, even you. I know you want Burke Magnus and Jimmy Pitaro and Connor Schell to call you, but even you will concede, correct? That there are, anytime the crystal clock is of the world say that the rules are the same for everybody, they are not the same for everybody. You agree? It's just not. That's just not true.
Here's how I will agree with that. The rules at The Athletic are not the same for everybody. The rules at SBJ are not the same for everybody. Everybody's different.
Listen, talent. Ken Rosenthal can do a lot more stuff than I can. I agree with you on that, 100%.
The Richard Deitch rules at The Athletic.
Well, I would say that at Sports Business Daily, though, who has more juice than you? Austin Karp?
Hey, I'm in D.C. We're starting a sports media empire here. Me, Scott Van Pelt, Kornheiser, Wilbon on occasion.
Yeah, I would think actually at Sports Business Daily, you're sort of the Van Pelt there. You've basically been able to do what you want. Yeah, you got more juice than Ben Fisher, right? Eric Prisbell.
What? Oh, they have plenty of juice. The NFL reporter and the MLB reporter. Come on.
I don't know. I want to see one of those guys walk into Abe's office and say, "I want to move to Sacramento, California. Shut up shop here. Can I do it?"
Ben Fisher did that. Ben Fisher went out to the Silicon Valley for a year.
Oh, did he? All right, nice. Good job by you guys. Good management.
This weekend, some of the best sports TV I ever saw, and you wrote about it, was when they announced the Hall of Fame to Bill Cowher and Jimmy Johnson, respectively, on CBS and Fox. And I just thought, looking at the emotions of that. I just thought that that was more compelling than any of the football I saw on TV. Just I especially like on the Fox one where they showed Troy Aikman, and I guess there's like a crying Aikman meme going around, but it's I just thought that was really cool, and I haven't clicked on your story yet, though I saw the headline. I'm looking forward to reading it.
Yeah, I talked to the producer of the NFL today, and sort of got the background on how all that came together. And you know, in short, the Hall of Fame suggested it, and then CBS went into very much sort of a stealth mode to not let anybody outside of a very few handful of people know that it was coming, and they totally surprised Cower on air. Cower did not know. I am sure Johnson. I don't know if Johnson knew or not. I can tell you, Bill Cower did not know when.
Oh no, Johnson had the exact same reaction on his face.
Yeah. Where it was just my guess is yeah.
I mean,
the thing about that, John, is that, and I'm with you. The NFL studio shows are you know sort of so formulaic at times, and scripted is maybe just a little too strong, but you kind of know what you're getting. You get the same laughing at every single joke. It's, you know, you're only going to go so far in terms of criticizing the NFL. So when you get like some kind of genuine moment like that, even if it was a staged, quote unquote, staged genuine moment, it was nice. It was nice to see. And Aikman and Jimmy Johnson's reactions were very honest. And obviously Bill Cower and the rest of that group were, you know, I think we're totally touched by Cower. And it's very clear that the staff of both places really, really like Cower and really like Johnson a lot. Like, you can't fake that stuff. And so you're right. It was really two really good moments. And
yeah, but it's also more like you said, like in terms of the being scripted, like the thing that struck me about the Johnson one was Strahan. And you know, Boomer and a couple of the guys on CBS. Like, there seemed to be, like, and maybe they're good actors, but I suspect they're not. There seemed to be genuine joy that this was happening, and I just thought it was really, I felt privileged to watch it. Like I love when they show people hearing they're getting into the Hall of Fame and the emotions, and just seeing it live on air like that, I just thought was really, really cool.
Yeah, CBS told me that Boomer Esiason and Nate Burleson did not know, so that was genuine surprise. Phil Simms and James Brown were told about 15, 20 minutes before they went on the air, because they were going to be sort of introing and being part of the segment when David Baker walked on. So that's why they gave them the heads up. But they didn't give them the heads up until essentially right before the show to sort of keep secrecy. So pretty amazing job by CBS to pull that off. All right, very quickly before I let you go, DAZN releasing streaming numbers. According to DAZN, their numbers were they doubled their streams in 2019. Obviously, that's good news for them. So much of DAZN seems to be very dependent on events, though, John. Like, you know, you get a fight that people are interested in, people jump to that service. I think the rubber meets the road in terms of how many people will watch DAZN away from these like sort of mega fight stuff.
Yeah, the problem with those numbers are they come from DAZN, so they're not verified by Nielsen. There are no specific numbers for specific events. And the numbers are also global, so it's more than just the U.S. market. But I went with the story because I just thought it was interesting. They gave a total number of streams that I don't have it in front of me, but so I forget what it was. But it's a really high number of streams, and you know I would have thought that boxing would have ruled the day, and I guess it did claim the top spot. But Champions League soccer, football, was really, I think it took maybe six or seven of the top 10 shows. What was soccer, and that surprised me as well. So I just thought it was a nice snapshot in terms of what's working for DAZN, and to me it suggests where they're going to sort of place their bets as all these rights start coming up going forward.
All right, and then finally, John. You know, I started that Sports Illustrated podcast like many, many years ago. I don't remember what it was. I think 2015 or something like that. You were one of my first guests, so I probably one of the first people to bring you on a podcast. And then all these years later, the loyalty that is not shown by you by jumping on Trainus podcast, clearly a competitor in the big burgeoning sports media podcast space. I mean, Is it just a case of John Oren needs to push the John Oren brand wherever possible?
John Oren does not talk about John Oren in the third person, so I'm going to try not to do that. But I've told you I'm Team Deitch through and through. But I will also, as I said over Twitter to you, Richard, I will attend the opening of an envelope, as they say. So I am America's podcast guest, and I'm willing and able to go, you know, for whoever will have me.
I can't kill you for that. That's a good strategy, and you got to push the all-around brand. And I enjoyed the Trina end of the year show that you did with Marchand and Trina. So good on all of you guys. All right, John Oren, as I mentioned at the top, is the Sports Business Daily and Sports Business Journal's media reporter. Check out his work at those publications. Check him out on Twitter at the Oren SBJ, and check out his newsletter that comes out. What day does that come out, John?
Monday and Wednesday, usually around 7 to between, anytime between like 7 and 9 o'clock, depending on how late I am with deadline.
All right, and on Twitter, it's Oren_SBJ. I don't think I said that, at Oren_SBJ. All right, John, as always, thank you for the time, and we will certainly do this again.
Thanks, Artie.
All right, back in the studio, my thanks to John Oren for 40 minutes or so of some fun sports media talk. If you like this kind of content, check out our archives page. Last couple of podcasts include Jalen Rose of ESPN, Adam Amin of ESPN, Jim Ross, the iconic wrestling broadcaster, and Joe Neeson, formerly of Sports Illustrated. Go to the Sports Media with Richard Deitch page. Please listen to the stuff. If you like it, leave us a 5-star review and a rating. That is pretty much how this stuff continues. Let me thank Patrick Antonetti for his work editing this podcast. Thanks to Chris Corcoran, Spencer Brown, Sean Cherry, and John McDermott of Cadence 13. We'll be back in a week for another episode of the Sports Media with Richard Deitch podcast. Take care.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua, and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter, and he said, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film, and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.